Hi, welcome everybody to the Holla Africa podcast. This is our sex positive and very random podcast because we don't believe that we should just write things down. We should find different ways of doing these things. So today in the studio, in our lovely studio that has like all sorts of things and all sorts of gadgets, we have Tabile. Tabile, will you tell us a little bit about yourself, baby?
Hi, everyone. I am a ball of awesome.
Yes.
Really, I really am. Great hair, numerical more than artistic, but I fancy myself an art person. So
an art person?
Yes.
Are you just out here on the outskirts?
I really am, you know, and I feel like if you guys could give the Princess of Africa a chance, then maybe I should just be like given a chance as well. Like I can like write some really terrible things and you guys could say that I'm a legend like 20, 30 years from now.
Are you throwing low-key shade?
I'm not. I'm just saying, you know, that
that's low-key shade.
Some people have, yeah.
Some people have talent, some people don't.
Yeah. And I would like to explore the part that I like, that I'm not necessarily talented at.
You know what? You know what? Before you stay throwing shade, we are going to move into what we are actually here to talk about. So now, we have gathered here today. Okay, this is not a wedding. But we've gathered here today to talk about sex and mental health. And yeah, these are the things, because like we always, there's always the fun topics, the this, the that, the this. But then there's also like the logistics of sex and like sort of the emotions, and there's so much. And I know for me, I tried before this podcast to actually do some digging about like sex and mental health. And I can tell you very nicely, I think I found 4 articles, and one of them I think was WebMD. And I was just like, oh fam. And it's actually something that is very, very underwritten about. So that's the topic we're going to be discussing today. But I feel like a good place to start is, Tavile, tell us about your sex, babe. Like, when you think of sex, and when you think of, ooh, yeah, touching, woo, okay, yeah, no, go.
Fine. Lord, okay, where do we start? I love kink.
Nice.
I love kink in all of its glory. It is great. And yeah, so my sex most of the time is kinky. Mm-hmm. I do dabble in vanilla every now and again.
You should have seen her face when she said vanilla. I was just like, wow. So me riding my partner a few nights ago, it just suddenly seems like it ain't shit, but it's
no,
okay.
No, but vanilla is great, right? It's great, but it's not great all the time. Well, at least not for me.
Okay.
So yeah, so I love the exploration part of sex. Mm-hmm. And the fact that like you get to have fun. It's not that serious. It's serious, but it's not that serious. So I want to laugh during sex. You know, if you tickle me, guys, I'm going to laugh. But also don't tickle. Like, okay. But you're bound to touch like a spot that's particularly like ticklish. So yeah. So yeah, but I mean, sex is great. It is wonderful. It is, whoo. Yeah, it's great.
So you're a fan of sex. Like, I think one of the first times, the first time I actually ever met you, it was at an erotic justice talk.
Yes.
And just to give a little bit of recap, we've known each other for like, what is it? Like a year and some change now.
Yeah.
Moved to the city, got new friends. Hi. And I remember it was you and 2 other people who I termed you as a collective, the ungovernables. And these women were incredible. The stuff they knew about kink, the stuff they knew about sex, the stuff they knew about pleasure, the stuff they knew about like a lot of things. Like, you guys were like really incredible. Sure, you would not keep quiet when other people were talking and you would giggle in your corner and you were ungovernable. But I loved like the fact that you guys were so open and vibey about your sex and like just, yo, like just talking in that space. And even when you were fetched as to whether your sex was feminist enough because it involved kink, you came and you did this and you talked and you vibed. And yes. So like, no, I love that. So, and now getting to know you like more and more, and then like getting to know you more intimately, you started to speak to me about sort of like issues of like mental health that you went through and stuff. Like, can you speak a little bit more on that? Like, as candidly as you want to. Also, these people, they don't know you.
So I live with type 2 bipolar, or what was previously known as manic depression. Got formally diagnosed in 2012, because you're a Yashim. 2012 was, it was a year. But before 2012, I knew there was something that wasn't quite right with my moods. I mean, my mom had always called me a moody child. And I remember when I was in grade 7 and I was like to her, "Mama, I'm depressed." And her thing was, "You can't be depressed. You're a child." Mm-hmm. And this is coming from a health professional. My mother is a professional nurse and she has worked in a psych ward before. Mm-hmm. So you'd almost expect her to understand and to know better. Mm-hmm. But I think we all know that as much as you might be an expert in a specific field, once that issue hits close to home because it's somebody close to you that you love, mm-hmm. all reasoning and logic just goes out of the window and you basically speak from feeling. So yeah, got diagnosed in 2012 with manic depression and general anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. And I have been managing it ever since. Mm-hmm. You know, some months or years have been better than others. But yes, we live and we fight.
And you get through every day.
Barely, but yes, we do.
Okay. So like now when you started having, like, so now when you first noticed, because now this is very, very specific, like you and I will just, we've had all sorts of conversations about how it's affected different facets of your life. But like, I think what I'd love to explore right now is even in the process of like learning it, and like you, as you said, like 2012, you done had you a time, right? And even before that and stuff, like how did it affect sort of the way you engaged with sex?
When I look back and how my mania, or what I then knew what to be mania was, I self-medicated during mania with sex. Mm-hmm. I did take part in very risky sexual behavior in my second year. Most, you know, that's where...
Second year of university or...
Yeah, second year of university. So okay. This was like 2010.
Okay.
So that was a wild time.
So like when you say like risky sexual behavior, because I know like especially... Oh yes, oh, I feel like we did not clarify that you are a queer woman, did we?
No.
So now I know there'll be people listening to this podcast thinking, "Oh my God, I wonder what dude she was fucking." But like, I was about to be like, "Are we allowed to say fucking on this podcast?"
And yes,
I was like,
"We are.
It's our fucking podcast." Boom.
But exactly.
Yes.
Identify as a queer woman, but also round about that time. So how, here's how my identity politics, I guess, if you would like to call them, went by. So yeah, I was like straight. And doing all straight things.
You should see her doing straight and doing the bunny ears.
I mean, and I was just like, but like, honey, we've been knowing that you aren't straight. And here we are.
Mm-hmm.
I came out to one of my friends. Mm-hmm. And, but when I came out, it was, "I am bisexual."
Oh, yeah, no, it's okay.
Right? Because I was so scared of the lesbian label.
Mm-hmm.
And she identified as a lesbian. Mm-hmm. She is a masculine-presenting lesbian woman. So she started taking me around. There were certain events that she wanted me to introduce me to. Like, it was completely just queer women spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was friends of FOC, or Friends of Open Closet Parties.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that I wasn't ready for that space. So she took me to another space, where it was a women only, queer women only poetry.
Ooh.
Event, right? They were held once every month in different parts of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I got introduced into some sort of queer community.
Okay.
I finally went from bisexual to no label.
Oh, yeah. That's always a fun time where you're like, I'm not going to be boxed, Anne.
Exactly. I am a human.
I am a human. Oh, yes. The I am a human face.
We all and then finally, I think I was just like, what am I so scared of?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I stopped trying to keep up appearances of being bisexual, of being a no label.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully owned the term lesbian.
Okay.
Because I think I felt that I was ready to embrace my identity of being a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, I mean, during those years, I had sex with men.
Okay.
I did. I had sex with men and I had sex with women. And sometimes the sex with men was enjoyable.
Guys.
Sometimes not.
Like, actually, and that needs to be a podcast all by itself.
Listen, it wasn't, I used to tell people to get off me. I remember my friends used to say that, you are rude as fuck. And I'm like, no. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it right.
Okay.
You're not listening to what I'm saying. So what are you doing on top of me? Get off me. It really is that simple. If you're not going to listen to how I want my sex, and you're not going to give me the sex how I want my sex, then what are we doing?
Nothing.
Because for me, sex is a fun activity. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have sex if it's not going to be fun.
No, that's true. I feel you should have been there for our Faking Orgasms podcast. Like, some of us had the... stayed for a while just like faking our best lives. But to get back to like the topic, so you went through this phase. So now during your risky, like sort of that time where your sex got very risky, like who were you having sex with? Like how were you having the sex? And also what was going through your mind like when it was happening and things?
Yeah. I was having sex with men. Mm-hmm. I had guy friends and I would have sex with their friends.
Okay. Using your networks, apparently.
Yes! Because, you know? And I was like, rugby guys are so hot. Like, their bodies are... Like, I look at a rugby guy even today and I'm just like, must be nice.
That it must be nice there by
yes.
You.
I think it has got something to do with the power, right?
Yeah, that full force,
yes.
Full throttle, just boof.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, but... It's okay.
And I used to have sex with women.
Mm-hmm.
Women that identified as straight who had boyfriends. I used to get such a thrill out of that. Because I'm just like, I'm fucking your girlfriend and you're out here buying me dinner and drinks. And that's so great.
Wait, so you'd also like hang out with the people whose girlfriends you were sleeping with?
Yes. I mean, I am... I guess femme presenting.
Yeah, no, she is femme presenting.
So
she got herself a cute little afro. You should see her earrings. She has like some boots on and her jeans are hugging that butt. Hugging that butt. I just thought I'd give a young description. You can check her out on our Instagram when this goes up. But yes.
So, and it was just, I mean, it was fun, I guess. You know, I think a good number of queer women could relate to the straight girl phase, as I like calling it.
I've never gone through the straight girl phase. That is a podcast topic. I'm even noting that down while you keep talking. Like, that thing of, like, where you just, like, powered through the straight girls, no.
Yo,
bro. Okay.
I used to kiss them in clubs. It used to be a whole thing, you know? So, yeah, that's who I was having sex with.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and it was, I mean, with the women, for example, it was very impulsive, right? And that's the whole thing with mania, is that you get super impulsive and you want to do things now because it's a rush.
Mm-hmm.
Your sense of adventure sort of eclipses the safety side of what you're doing.
Okay.
So it gets very tricky because your life can be at risk.
Because you'll do something just now, even if you can recognize the risk.
Yes, but
what you're doing.
At that point, it's not about, like, the risk does not matter.
Okay.
And this goes beyond sex, right? So how mania, how people act in mania will switch.
Okay.
It might not necessarily be risky sex behavior. For somebody, it could be doing extreme sports and getting an adrenaline rush, there is the ridiculous spending of money within a manic episode, and it could ruin you financially.
So you buy a car where you have no business buying a car.
You make impulsive buys. I mean, the last time I had a manic episode like that, I bought a whole flight ticket to Cape Town that I did not use.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So
it's about how you feel in that moment and how sometimes you can actually, because I think that's something a lot of people don't recognize. They just recognize it as, you know, that whole thing of YOLO and best life. I just use YOLO out loud. Damn it. I can't take that back. But like that sort of like live your best life thingy. But when you look at it in hindsight, that it could have been something that was actually maybe a little bit too intense and maybe a little bit too risky and maybe a little bit too. So for you, that played out in the way you had sex. So was it just like, other than, you know, socially doing things that were like the wildness, like hanging out with a dude, but then like fucking his girlfriend, like, and even the idea of like just like hooking up with that many straight girls, like you would have, you know, it's just the dynamics and the this and the risking of the hurt feelings and the, so like even that, but also was there something that was also sort of like biologically risky about like what you're doing, like generally unsafe sex in terms of like, you know.
Okay, so when I had sex with men,
mm-hmm.
safety was a thing 95% of the time.
Okay.
With the women, it just wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
Because I remember my friend used to, she used to have a girlfriend in Pretoria. So she would go to Pretoria every weekend and to go see the girlfriend. And whenever she came back, or during the week,
mm-hmm.
and whenever she came back, she'd come back with dental dams and mm-hmm. finger cuts from, what's this, out, mm-hmm. the out clinic.
Yeah.
Because there was no clinic, and I'm not sure if there is a clinic now, that in Johannesburg that caters for queer sex
mm-hmm.
in terms of safe sex goods.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when she handed me the dental dam and I took it out of its packaging. And I'm like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this?
I feel people still don't know, but you know, it's okay.
Because I'm just like, no, she's like, no, she explained the whole process. And I'm like, yeah, like, listen, I'm not trying to scare whoever it is that I'm having sex with, you know. Imagine now I whip up this thing and I'm putting it against their vagina.
It's like, what is this? Take this away.
You know, I was like, but finger cuts are cool. Finger cuts are fine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Dental dam? Like,
nah, fam.
Because I'm just like, yo, within the moment, and then now I must whip this out.
The sheet of plastic.
And back then, it used to be, and they have them like in what, banana flavor, and all of
grape.
These things.
I once licked a grape one, and I was like, I don't want to lick this anymore.
Exactly. Because I'm just like, I love the taste of vagina, right?
They should make vagina flavored ones, but what does a vagina taste like?
Exactly. So I was, so with the women, it really was unsafe
mm-hmm.
sex. And again, I got lucky. I did not catch anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, like okay. I think it got to a point where I thought that I was getting addicted to the behavior.
Okay.
And I somehow managed to stop cold turkey for like 2 years.
You just stopped having sex?
I stopped having sex.
Wait, like nothing?
Nothing.
Zip zero.
Zip zero.
No one even looked sideways at your boob. Okay, maybe they did.
They did.
Did somebody cup a boob? Did they cup a breast?
Mm-hmm.
No?
I was just like, nah.
Away. Oh, okay. So you stopped cold turkey for 2 years?
Yeah.
And during this time, were you also exploring, like, sort of, like, the mental health things that you were, like, going through? Or did you marry the two at the time? Like, did you actually have moments where, after the main year, you'd be like, oh shit, that was because of this, or was it just a period of time that...
It was just a period of time that,
things were happening.
Because, and the thing is that people around you don't recognize that it's mania, because to the outside world, it looks like you being a really fun person, and it's a vibe.
It's a vibe.
It's a total vibe.
And especially if you're in second year uni, it's like, woo, sir.
You know?
Yeah.
So you're just out there just doing the most. And yeah, and it got to a point where, because it was like, I think halfway through second year, where I was just like, this is actually not a thing. It isn't a thing.
Like, you recognized internally that this is
yeah.
a real thing.
Oh, and also shame, it wasn't really 2 years. It was like a year and over 6 months. Because I just remembered now that.
Somewhere, in there's a partner who's just like, woof.
Yes, in November, yes. The partner from November 2011, you know are recognized. You are. I'm sorry. yeah. So, it really was just...
like, just, it's just, okay.
It was the most, right? It really was just the most. Like,
you should see her face right now. She's just like looking around being like, damn, this was just...
No,
just the most.
No, I did a lot. I really did a lot.
You did like, the absolute most.
I lived. but yeah, but looking back, like you do realize the safety aspect of it and the fact that you weren't being safe. And you recognize that you can't do that. And because like, it's not just about yourself, right? Mm-hmm. It's about your sexual partners as well, and the fact that they deserve to be safe too.
Yeah.
And as much as it's your responsibility and your sexual partner's responsibility, I couldn't help feeling that I'm putting people at risk with the way that
you were like, I was conducting going about. Yourself.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I had to dial it back. And that's what I do. If I feel like I am doing too much of something, where it gets to a point where it looks like it's becoming an addiction of some sort, I go cold turkey.
Okay. And you just handle it from...
I go cold turkey because I need to convince myself that I'm in control of my life and of this. Because the one thing with mental illness is that it takes away so much of your control.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot of it, because he can't control your moods. Medication may help, but...
to control your moods is something that's quite difficult.
It's difficult. Recognizing that you are experiencing a manic episode and you're about to do something and... training yourself to be responsible in that moment, that if I can't hold myself accountable, then in that moment I need to tell my friends, so that if it is taking the bank card away from me, they do that. If it is them putting their foot down and saying, no, actually we're going home, it's that. So, and I mean, it's a heavy thing to put on other people as well, isn't it? The fact that they need to be cognizant of
where you're at.
And you sort of become the party pooper at times.
But it's what's important. I need to just note this for everyone listening. What's important that this beautiful woman here has taught me, like, over the year and a bit I've known her, is the importance of reaching out and the importance of being able to speak to somebody and being able to know that, to identify your safe spaces as well. To identify your safe spaces in terms of people and, because that's very, very important. And which actually just nicely, I'm going to use this word because I've been trying to use it for like 3 months. This segues us nicely into the thingy. It just slides us very nicely into like the next thing I'd love to talk about is how you engage with this in terms of a partner. And I'm talking in terms of like not just like a one night stand or whatever, but like a long term partner where you're like, okay, cool, so you and me are doing this thing, and so you're done with the probably the whole part of like putting your best foot forward all the time. It's like, oh my gosh, I wake up, put makeup on my face before you wake up, brush my teeth, do some squats. Like, okay, fine, you never go through that phase, whatever. I used to wake up and brush my teeth. Like before they woke up, then I'd slide back into bed. But that is not the point. These are my own things. I now am different because it's been 7 years, but it's fine. So like for me, what I'd love to discuss with you now is how to navigate this within a relationship. Because as I said, I tried to read a little bit about this, and I've also had a couple of conversations with people who like have like a mental illness of some sort, and especially the conversation I've had a lot is one surrounding depression and surrounding this idea. So if you're having like a depressive episode, like, and where like you're in like a truly dark place and you don't want to have sex, so like it's how to navigate that when sort of like now you've got this long-term partner thing. So like to give experience in terms of me, there was a time when I was like in a very, very bad space. And of like now I realized that I actually was going through a bout of depression, and but it manifested in various ways. And one of the ways was I did not want my partner to touch me. The thought, I love this woman to death. We've been together 4 years. She has a way of turning me the fuck out. Where it's like I've had enough blackout sex with her, where you like wake up the next morning, you're like, oh, I'm sorry, what? Him? I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Like, hey. And she's like, no, you came and then you just, so I suppose you're good. Like, you had fun last night and you're like, whatever, shut up your face, don't look at me. So like, but we went through a time, and it wasn't just one night. It's not just two nights. It was months of when she touched me, I'd be enraged. And I've had, friends who I've spoken to, and they've told me where, there's one friend who went through like a time of depression, and whenever her partner would touch her, she'd start crying. So she's like, we went from having sex where I'd be riding that dick. Like, she used to go home for lunch. Like, I'd be like, hey babes, you want to catch some lunch? And she's like, ooh, say no. Unfortunately, no, because I got to get home. And I'd be like, no, but come on. Like, you did this on Monday as well, and you did this on Wednesday. I'm like just trying to catch a Friday lunch, babs. And she's like, I'm going home. But she went from that to like, you know, her partner touching her, and she tell me how she's like, she burst into tears and she doesn't know why, and she doesn't know what's going on. And I guess sometimes, like, if you do know what's going on, like, how do you navigate that? Because I know I navigated it very badly. Like, I was just kind of the worst, and then it stopped and we just moved on. And luckily for me, I had a very loving partner and a very, very patient partner. And she would ask me what's wrong, and she'd try and thinky. But I know that's not always easy. And I know that came from 4 years of being together. But like, to speak on it, like, how do you navigate? How would you navigate something like that?
Okay, I'll speak on the recent relationship that I had. Because I feel like it featured prominently there than in my other previous relationships. Because in my other previous relationships, and I think I did this on purpose, mm-hmm. I got into long-distance relationship.
Okay.
Right? So emotionally, like over the phone, I could hype myself up to be there. Mm-hmm. But when you date someone within the same city who's got the resources to get to you. Actually, we weren't even in the same city when we started dating. She was in Johannesburg and I was in Pretoria.
Yeah.
At that point. And she worked really strange hours, but she would come to Pretoria.
You did live far though when we first met. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but it's like an hour.
Yeah, no, chum. Pretoria's far, and God bless her for like maintaining that. It's fine.
And I remember, because when we started the relationship, like, everybody could see that, okay, y'all are really dating, but we had this thing where we are a thing. Hey, yes, that was our word, yes.
Yeah, we're a thing. I remember that time. It's like, oh, you're thinging. I remember that, and I remember just being like, these trash people. But that's how I started, so I couldn't say it out loud.
So, when we finally actually decided that, okay, we are dating, so we're going to do this. And I came clean with my mental illness. Mm-hmm. And I told her some things, because obviously, like, you don't want to overload somebody with a whole lot of information, mm-hmm. especially somebody that has not dated someone with a mental illness before. So, I mean, this was completely new territory for her. And I told her that I have bipolar, mm-hmm. and this is what the illness is. And with me, this is how I feel at times when I'm in a depressive bout. Mm-hmm. This is how my body would react. This is how my mind processes things. And this is how it manifests.
Okay.
So there will be times when all I want you to do is just to hold me, but I don't want to have sex. I don't want to have sex. I don't want any sexual activity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be hard. And I know you say it's okay for now because you haven't experienced it yet. But I'm telling you that this is what's going to happen. And she was just like, yeah, okay. But I was also going through the most with my parents mm-hmm. around about that time. And I think after like two, three weeks after that discussion, my depression knocked over and said, hey.
Started sending SMSs, WhatsApps, going, what you doing tonight?
Calling me on every line available.
Right, Messenger, subtweeting you, DMing, liking your Instagram posts, a thing.
It even sent a whole dove.
It sent a dove.
A dove.
Took
a
it
dove.
Old school, blabs.
Old school, because it was just like,
it went.
This technology is not working, so this is what we're going to do.
We're going to set doves and smoke signals.
And now, my partner had to deal with me not wanting sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we were in a time where our relationship was new. So the sex is just like, and we want to have sex all the time.
Like, can we have sex here without being arrested? Yes, we can.
We used to leave our friends to have sex. That's how real
it
was.
I remember that time when we came to your house and you guys went to make the bed. Like, yeah, it's like, oh no, guys, we're all going to sleep soon. Let me go arrange the bed. These guys came back an hour and a half later. This is not the biggest apartment in the world. Ne? So, we were like, okay, it's nice there by you. Us as an older couple, me and my partner, we were like, eh, these youths and their miscellaneous sexing. They do not have any self-control. But yeah, no, I remember that time. I do.
It was the most, like, and it was hot, hey? That December was really, really hot.
Mm.
And we used to have sex in Pretoria heat, guys. Gosh. And we would have sex marathons because obviously
you just
lesbians
can't.
Don't do 15 minute sex. I'm sorry, hetero people.
This is the second time you thrown shade on this podcast. Girl, what's wrong with you?
I'm just saying.
Just
some pigs are more equal than others.
Aye, okay.
But it was just the whole thing of we went from having sex all the time, like the whole morning, the whole afternoon, having sex.
Only coming up for oros.
Yes, actually. And we replenished, like our thing was fruit, right? It was easy, and it was already cut up fruit. So you just took it out of the fridge, you know, had a few bites, and then go back mm-hmm. to business. Yeah, so we had 3 weeks of all of that lovely, and then all of a sudden, I did not want to have sex.
Mm.
I did not want to have sex at all. And it was hard for my partner. Like, as much as she was understanding, it really was hard for her.
Mm.
And there was a point where she thought it was her.
Mm.
And I'm like, it's not you. You are sexy as fuck. I would jump your bones if I had it in me, but I can't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't. I just want to sit here. I don't want to go out. I want to lie in bed and not do anything. And yeah,
it's okay. Whoo! No, it's okay. Do you want a tissue? Okay, I think I have a tissue. Do you want a tissue? You okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was the first time that I really had to find a way, to find a balance. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're finding a balance at a time where you have nothing within you to try do anything. But you can't completely, totally shut down because you have this other person in your life that you had said yes. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, we're going to do this life thing for as long as we can do it together. Mm-hmm. And they are there and they are trying. They are trying to show up for you how you'd want them to show up. Mm. But it's hard for you as well to translate what that looks like, what that entails. Mm. So when it came to the sex, it got really deep. I think we went for a month, mm-hmm, without sex. Then I had to go home. Then I stayed home for another 2 to 3 weeks. And I was getting a little bit better.
Okay.
But I was still depressed. But then my depression did a switch on me. Mm-hmm. And it decided, okay, we are over with the depression and low libido. How about we have you depressed as fuck and high libido?
Oh. So that is also a thing too.
No, that is also a thing.
Okay.
Now it came into something else because partner is busy during that time because she gets most of her work during the summertime. Mm-hmm. I'm back and I'm wanting sex all the time. All the time. And this is not December anymore where she had a more flexible schedule, mm-hmm, you know? So she's not having the time to come around
and just like really, really do the work, shall we say.
Yes.
Do the work.
Now you get pissed because, I mean, you have a partner, right? Mm-hmm. What are they there for if not to give you sex? Especially when your partner loves sex, mm, and they're always ready, mm-hmm, to have sex. Mm-hmm. And now, capitalism gets in the way.
Capitalism. Damn that capitalism. But
right?
Yeah. Mm.
But you don't get mad at capitalism. You get mad
at your partner.
At your partner.
Okay.
So it's a lot to navigate. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think the one thing that I must also mention with regards to the low libido, mm-hmm, and most people not feeling like they want to be touched. A good number of us during depressive episodes gain tons of weight as well.
Okay.
So you, with me, there was a feeling of being disgusted with this body. Mm-hmm. Right? And if I can't stand this body, why the hell would somebody else want this? So it lays a great deal on your self-esteem. Mm-hmm. But there's also your partner's self-esteem as well to consider.
Okay.
You know, because, I mean, it's... And, I mean, people might say that, yeah, but your partner shouldn't be centering themselves when you're ill. But we're human. And I think sometimes when we say some things, we forget that we're all human. Your partner is human. So when you not wanting to have sex feels like and reads like rejection, it will affect them. Mm. Nobody likes rejection.
No one. God have mercy, no one.
Especially from somebody that you love. Mm. Nobody wants that. So sex and depression is, it's a slippery slope. Because even the meds that you take don't help. Mm. They don't help. There's nothing that increases your libido. Like in most of, well, with me at least, and they tried different combinations of mood stabilizers and everything else, they just numbed me the fuck out. Mm. Like I couldn't even masturbate on it. Like what are sexual thoughts? So, at the present point in time.
Yeah.
So why would you want somebody to touch you? Because also like...
Why?
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 Let go away. And I love cuddles. And there will be times when I'm on the opposite end of the bed. And there's a huge space mm-hmm. between us. Because I don't want to be touched. But it's not easy to talk about. It's very hard to balance the fact that you need this time to heal, mm-hmm. but also keeping your partner in mind.
Okay.
And for on the partner side, I guess it might be a thing of they love you, they want things to get better, and they don't know how to make it better. And I mean, we all feel powerless when we can't protect the people that we love.
It's true. That is actually true.
So there's a whole lot of emotions within that space. And the best thing is to be honest and mm-hmm. to communicate. Mm-hmm. And to and reassurance, guys. Reassurance is real. Reaffirming your partner is real. Because I don't... I would like to think that it does not take much, that even when you're in that space, mm-hmm. to just let them know that I still want you. I'm just unable to show that to you mm-hmm. at the moment, but I still want you. So reaffirm both of you. From both sides. Reaffirmation is a thing.
Just say, constant, I know we're here. We're cognizant of why we're here. We know what's happening, and it'll be okay. Not today, maybe not tomorrow, but
exactly. But communication is key, and reaffirming each other is key.
And
I think we forget to reaffirm each other.
Okay.
And that's when it goes downhill.
And I am going to cut you off because I can see you. I can see. I am in the studio, and I can see where she's at. So. I am going to say thank you. Thank you so much for your wisdom. Thank you so much for doing this. You sip that. We love you. So this has been a Holla Africa podcast. I hope there's something that you've taken away from this. There's something that you picked up, and I hope we learn things, and I hope we get to a space where we can communicate things. And it's not a real thing. It is like mental health is so often ignored, and we need to stop ignoring it, because mm-hmm. same way we don't ignore the flu, we don't ignore colds, we don't ignore cancer, we don't ignore any of those things. Yes, it comes in varying degrees, but it's something we need to talk about. It's something that we need to engage with. So I'm going to be here for my friend right now. And so I'm going to wrap this podcast up, and I'm going to say thank you so much for listening. And as always, Holla loves you. Bye.